Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July the 17th, 2009. What now? I think that just about sums it up. What now for the commodity markets? We'll work on a discerning answer today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Craig Parr of the Andersons in Maumee, Ohio. Our panelists today are Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. Who will blink first, the farm owners of old crop corn or the commodity markets in Chicago? It just seems to me that there's a massive game of chicken on right now.
Well, I guess we kind of feel it's probably going to be the producer here. We had a lot of panic calls here in the last 2 weeks on what to do with some old crop remaining inventory. And this time of year, it's been moved in the elevator, and they don't want to get stuck with some more charges. So we feel probably the producer's the one that's probably most fearful at the moment.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana.
Well, I think the answer to that question comes more so of how fast will the export business come and how aggressive will any of the buying be there? Because if that happens before the farmer opens the bin doors, then the merchandisers will get aggressive to buy the corn. But until they're put in the situation that they really, really need the corn for right now, they know that farmer is going to want to empty that bin before harvest time.
And Paul Cooley.
Well, we know, number one, that the trend is down. The marketplace is extremely bearish. It's extremely oversold. The marketplace is extremely worried about demand. And the other factor is we're probably trading a 157 bushel per acre crop. There's rumors out there that we probably could go to 160 bushels acre crop. The problem is that people are starting to realize that the corn crop does look better in their backyard.
Well, here the way the numbers settled out in Chicago from the corn pit. Remember, we give you the weekly daytime high and low, overnight and daytime trade, that is. So it's the composite. And this week we had expiration of the July month. So now we have August. So we have July beginning the week and August ending the week. It made for some interesting numbers as we finished up. The July corn futures had a high this week of $3.62. With a low of 316.5. This is July-September composite, with the September settling at 322.25. That was 23.25 lower from the last week's trade. That would have been from the July contract to this week. Now, December corn, a 331.5 settlement price, down 6.5 cents. So, what now? What does a producer do now? Do they sit back, Wayne Nelson, and wait? And if they've got old crop, are you going to dump?
We hope they don't have a lot of old crop left. We know there's a few listeners out there, or at least they have neighbors that have corn left in the bin. So the other guy at the coffee shop, we want to be able to tell him what to do. We think that we would probably be moving some of our old crop corn right in here. And if nothing else, at least hauling it in and putting it on a basis. And if we think we can see some short-term bounces like we saw on Friday, we take advantage of those. Any 5 to 10 cent pop in this market is a gift at this point in time, because we don't want to play the Russian roulette game of seeing who blinks first, because we think it's going to be a much more painful when the farmer blinks and it's not the merchandisers. We're going to move that.
Is everybody in agreement on that, that on pops we should move old crop corn if you're paying storage charges at the elevator on it? And is there a difference between that and something you might have room for if you have the extra space on your own farm?
Well, you know, we're this is the big jigsaw puzzle, and you know, a couple things that I'd like to bring up is that number one, that you know, it'll be September before we know how much denitrification. It'll be September before we know if there is a blight that's going to show up in the corn. We feel that the farmer is going to spray a little less headline and blight control and you know, things of that nature. We do know the farmer does have a better seed corn than they had 10 years ago, rootworm and BT and all those things. My hunch is that because of the cool temperatures, later planting, you know, the yield verdict is still out and subject to revisions. We know that the Iowa crop is tremendous. The problem here is always in the past, we always had a big carrot on the stick, either ethanol demand or exports or a smaller crop production. This year they hit us with a big carryover and possibly a big carryover the following year. So the farmer is on the defensive side of the road, Todd, and the big problem here is it doesn't seem like the new administration is pushing ethanol very hard. He's not pushing exports very hard. I think their hands are tied up with a lot of other problems they're facing in Washington.
And so the new administration not willing or looking at the farm community, at least at this point, will they be forced to some point in the future?
My general opinion is that if we do have 158 north yield, I think that they're going to be forced to take some changes in the farm program in order to stabilize the farm economy.
You're right. One, and I know this is out of the purview of the three of you as brokers, but I bet you get asked this question. On the acre program, have farmers been talking to you about this at all and what they should be doing? And if, for instance, you've got your own farm, what are you doing with it?
Well, it's very embarrassing if you make over $50,000 a year to report your income into the thing. They're nosy. The new acre program's mm-hmm. extremely nosy. It's very nosy for people that are very successful and have a lot of money. And the landlords, and particularly in cash-rich situations, are very reluctant to get information from their landowners. And it could be a one-year deal for the acre program. And as a general rule, it's not very popular. And no matter how much the government huffs and puffs and talks, I think it's going to be a non-used program.
In our area, Todd, most of the people are saying it's too darn confusing. They don't know if it'll work. They don't want to fill out all the paperwork. The SURE program doesn't even have all the rules out there yet. They've had meetings. Nobody seems to be coming up. They think it will pay off this coming year. But I think, aren't we signing up for more than 1 year as we sign up?
Yep.
And it also cuts into some of your other payments. We think the government would have been a whole lot better to up its subsidies a little bit and let everybody take 5% more crop insurance and forget this program that people don't understand and aren't going to use. And it's written, so it takes a lawyer to understand the darn thing.
I think, Paul, you probably hit the nail on the head, and I heard this said in a different way, that when they decided to put income caps in, that they had to implement, and this may be a very short-lived program because the income caps are just invasive by nature. And
there's a group in Washington that want to penalize successful people, and this is another attempt to do it. And they also don't like a large farmer. You know, they're trying to penalize the big farm player, And unfortunately, it's penalty, and nobody wants to be in the penalty box very long.
Well, I was just thinking that your comment on it's embarrassing to have to report your income was one of the things that probably holds
and
a lot of folks
if,
up.
If, you know, it's public information and it's sort of like going to the ASCS office and saying, hey, I'm bidding on this farm. I want to know what this other guy's worth. And it's not a really a fair deal to know how much money your neighbor has in the bank.
All right. Enough on the acre program. I probably shouldn't have brought too much of that up. Let's go back. Bottom line, the corn market, new crop corn market for me, please.
Well, it's down to a point where we're getting down some lower levels where hopefully we can have some type of turn around technically on the new crop corn and see some type of recovery for guys who need to make some catch-up sales here. We're waiting on some news to come, but, you know, like Wayne said, we need some export business to come up here to get the ball rolling.
Did you make note of the outside, big outside down in the old crop weekly charts this week?
That's what the technician is going to be watching here as we come in here as the September tries to work higher and tries to fill the gap we left once the July went off.
Let's take a look at some more numbers. July wheat this week had a high of $5.49, a low at $4.91 and a quarter. A settlement price, if there was a bright spot in Chicago, was in the wheat futures September contract. This is July-September. Remember, we had expiration in the middle of the week. At $5.41 and three quarters, that was higher on the week by 50 cents. December futures at $5.68 gained 22 and three quarters. Is this just because harvest is wrapping up?
Well, I think that part of it is harvest wrapping up. We've seen some of the problems in some of the South American countries with some production problems, Todd, and Russia being cut back also, or the foreign Russian countries that way, and some of the problems with being able to ship their wheat to different countries that way. But all in all, we don't know how long it's going to last. It just doesn't look like this wheat market, when you look at the world supply, should stay up here.
All right. Move your attention.
Also, the wheat yields, I hear nothing but disappointment. And I think you're looking at less wheat acres planted next year based on, you know, a lot of the prices. And the other factor is that there is this major drought situation in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Move your attention now to the soy complex, where the bean futures lead option had a high for the week at $11.40, a low at $10.58 and a quarter. Settlement price for the August contract at $10.74 was down 54 and a quarter cents from last week's settlement price in the July. Remember, July and August, also the expiration month. November beans at $9.23 and a half settlement price, up 6.5 cents from last week. So the bean market was a wild, wild bean market for the week. Did you expect so much green on Friday on the screen?
Well, the bean situation is positive in the fact that the old crop carryover is still very tight. We did get flooded with the information that China is going to have a self 500,000 tons of old crop soybeans. There's going to be a floor price under it. The second big factor in the soybean situation is that if we do have a yield under 42 bushels per acre and demand is probably underestimated by the USDA, we could even have a tighter situation next year in theory on new crop soybeans. So it's a situation in which, you know, we have a tighter situation in the new crop soybean situation. There is preventive planting. We still have a large part of the growing season ahead of us. And maybe we got more beans planted, but still we might have had a no plant beans situation. So it's still a market that's got lots of twists and turns. And probably the one of the ones that still could actually rally as we go into the spring and, I mean, the summer time frame here.
But $9 beans seems like an awfully high number in retrospect. So are you willing to make sales?
We were very aggressive commentary about the old crop beans to make sure you got those moved. And we did encourage people to sell some $10 new crop beans from the combine. At this particular juncture, I think a person has to be on the conservative side of the play.
I agree with Paul. We've got most of all of our old crop beans moved, gone. I had a guy ask me for the third time what should I do with my beans now. And I says, well, I don't know. It doesn't really matter what I tell you. You didn't sell them the last three times I told you to. But I think that Paul's right. There's some chance because the beans are made in August, and we were a month late getting beans planted. So we're 2 weeks away from getting into the time of the year that beans are made rather than pollination time now like corn. But we're probably more of a seller up in the 9:30 to 9:40 range rather than a buyer, that's for sure.
Well, we felt we were aggressive trying to push beans out the door and make sales. We're promoters of put options. This has been an excellent opportunity to roll down your puts. But, too, if you're bullish longer term, I'd watch these Novembers down this 850, 845 area. Maybe it's an opportunity to maybe do some cash replacements for an August rally.
Here's some of the rest of the numbers as they finished up in Chicago from the CME Group. Live cattle, an August high this week of 86.50. A low at 83.50, settled up 290 at 86.37.5. The August feeders at 104.60. Up a buck 67.5. The lean hog July contract expired, so the July-August lean hogs settled $4.52.5 higher from last week at 64.67.5. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Craig Parr. He's with the Andersons in Maumee, Ohio.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was another generally pleasant week across Illinois, and the outlook for a cool July appears to be on the mark. Temperatures again this week were generally below normal, despite Wednesday's warm weather ahead of the cold front. Temperatures then reached the upper 80s in western Illinois and around 90 or above in the south. Temperatures this week averaged 2 to 3 degrees below normal south and more than 5 degrees below normal north. Through the first half of July, temperatures have averaged 3 to 5 degrees below normal across the entire state of Illinois and, in fact, across much of the Midwest. Most of Illinois received rain this week, with the heavy rain in parts of central Illinois. The primary rain event was a complex of thunderstorms that moved through the northern half of Illinois in the pre-dawn hours Wednesday and across the southern part of the state during Wednesday morning and afternoon. The heaviest rain was in western and central Illinois, with well over 2 inches in Warren, Morgan, and Logan counties, and widespread 1-inch amounts. Only extreme northeastern Illinois is short of rainfall so far this month. There will not be much of a change in the overall weather pattern across the Midwest next week. Illinois will remain under the influence of northwesterly flow aloft, which means that temperatures will stay near to below normal. A series of cold frontal passages next week will present a chance for scattered showers and thunderstorms somewhere in Illinois just about every other day. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, July the 17th, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Paul Cooley from ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Our guest is Craig Parr of the Andersons. He's located in Maumee, Ohio. Farmers in East Central Illinois will remember him as a buyer at the local elevator right here in Champaign County. He's since risen, of course, to the Andersons headquarters in Maumee and serves as the manager of commodity hedging and risk analysis. Craig started with the Andersons back in 1991. Thanks for being with us, Craig.
Well, thanks for having me, Todd.
How do you see the wheat market at this point? I know the Andersons are there close to Toledo, and so they will be close to the action for wheat.
I would say a couple things. Short order, it feels, even though we've had a substantial slide in wheat, that it is one of the higher priced commodities we're looking at. 540 September wheat close on Friday still feels high. Our yield has been pretty darn good, if not the best ever, in soft red for the state of Ohio in our draw territory. So we're feeling pretty good about the yields, at least in our region, and fundamentally speaking, we've got ample carryout as we have for a while in wheat.
going back to the it's always nice to talk to you, Craig. What I wanted to ask you is, going back to the financial crisis that we lived through in the November-January time frame there, and the tremendous meltdown in the financial world, do you think the commodity market changed, and did it go down? You know, like, did crude oil go down more than you anticipated? You know, just give me your historic perspective of what you, how that crisis unfolded.
Absolutely. I think with commodities, generally speaking, they typically, it feels like it's slow for them to go up, and they go down in a hurry, and it always goes deeper than what you anticipate. So to answer the question about commodities from 08, I think the biggest thing that we saw in 08 was the influx or the influence, the mere threat of governmental influence in commodities, and that's really all we needed. The one thing that rallies do not like in commodities is the influence of government, and I think that was true for crude. I think that was true for natural gas. I think that was true for some of the commodities at which we're dealing with today. Our raw commodities is wheat. Wheat is a primary one as well.
As we look ahead here, we see the charts are telling us things are in a downward trend. How low do you think that December corn can go, and will we see a bounce before it goes on down?
Well, I think December corn is very interesting. A couple things. It does not have a story. It has not had a story. And the farmer's in an interesting situation to where, in reality, if they have the appropriate insurance, they actually want harvest to be relatively low priced. And I think there's a, you know, it's kind of a delicate balance. I think the farmer reserves himself. He steps back from being a seller in the hole. I think that a low farm price during the fall or gut slot is not necessarily a bad thing for those who have the insurance. And I think the farmer can run the risk of being in a situation to where if these corn's 320 or it's $3 or 280, fact is, I think many farmers will step back and they're looking for the a situation to say, I run more risk that my fall price is higher than where it's at today.
What about the bean complex there, Craig?
Well, the beans one, I agree with, I think, a couple of panelists, and I think Paul in particular, that was saying, well, you know, the beans look like the ones that have the most potential. I would tend to agree. Obviously, we can always fumble around with the S&Ds, but the fact is that August makes or breaks the beans. I also agree with Todd's comment. Historically speaking, if you just look at bean price at 9, there were many years we would love to have a $9 bean price. I will say this. I'm a fan of using the options for risk management. I think, I can't remember which one, if it was Wayne or somebody, maybe it was Kurt, that said the use of options, specifically put options, are pricey in beans. One in particular, I like buying deep in the money puts because now you're buying something that has a tangible intrinsic value and less time value. Without getting overly sophisticated, if you want to be bullish beans, there's a way to do it and a way to do it right without just betting the whole bank.
One of the things that we, let's go back to the planting intentions report, and we had this major surprise in the corn acreage. Of course, it was June the 1st, and we still had a tremendous acreage of corn yet to plant and soybeans in the Midwest. What kind of an adjustment do you think the government will ultimately come out here based on your, you know, the preventive plantings that you're hearing and the acreage that didn't get planted? And what's your opinion on that?
I think they will adjust down somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 million acres. I'll be honest, I was shocked by the 87 million. And maybe that was because I had spent so much time talking with folks that were in the 84 to 85 million camp, and then to all of a sudden see 87 come almost what felt like it came out of nowhere. But I can, after going back through the numbers, talking with folks, of course you tend to rationalize after the fact, I think it will be, if there is a surprise to come forward from the government, it will be in acres, and it feels to me like it's closer to 86, not 87.
When will they make the adjustment?
Well, I think that's the key, is we have to wait until, and somebody correct me if it's wrong, but I don't think we get it till fall.
Right. Until we get the FSA numbers, you mean?
Correct.
Right.
What about the bean number? Acres.
You know, those felt a little bit more comfortable to me, but, you know, I was looking somewhere in the neighborhood of 77, and it may be slightly lower than that. But again, if you're going to plant 87 million and plant as many bean acres as what they are projecting that we are, then it's got to break somewhere. I understand cotton acres aren't down, so you got to find out where those acres are coming from. Maybe you take a million off of corn, and then you shave maybe a little bit of the beans. But generally speaking, that one felt the most comfortable to me.
Can you take us through, and I didn't follow the cash side of it, so I do not know the answer to this question, but did July wheat expire properly this time around, or was it just way too wide still?
Well, I think there's still an issue with convergence, and I think that's an ongoing issue that some people are just getting tired of hearing about, but it is an ongoing issue. Cash wheat still remains a pretty steep discount to the board price. I think the issue that I mentioned in the crude and everything else about governmental influence tends to have a negative impact on prices. Well, we're going through that live with the wheat contract. We're trying to figure out as an industry what is the right thing to do in order to rectify the situation. And there's several things been discussed. I've been in several committees myself to try to figure it out. Bottom line is we still have a slight issue, with convergence. And the CME and others need to try to figure out how we can make that work so it's a viable hedging tool.
The marketplace, in my opinion, is trading about 157 bushel crop of corn, a yield per acre. And there are rumors of 160 or above. What do you think the market is trading, and are we going to go towards that 160 bushel mark here with in your backyard anyway?
One thing to say about the ratings is, especially as high as we are today, there's typically only one way we go when we're this high, and that's down. But I will say this. Your 157 is about what I've talked with folks. The 157 corn yield is about what they're trading today. It feels to me like as good a weather as what we've had, heat-wise. Now, I know people talk about growing degree days, but the fact is it's hard to find a summer that we've had as nice and as cool. Now, granted, there's going to be areas that need moisture. And it feels like people are starting to bump up from the 157 to closer to 159. Now, the caveat is ratings and the temperatures for the rest of the year need to be as they are today, and we need to get more rain gradually. Today, 157 feels like they're edging higher.
157 edging higher. What do you give as a total crop then for the year?
Let's see. The government, you're going to test my memory here. The government was production 12.2524. Yeah, so it, you know, if we plug in a number as high as, you know, if we do drop off a million acres and we bump up the corn yield to 158, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt between 157 and 159. Now, all of a sudden, we're pushing almost close to 1.8, 1.9 billion carryout. So your production's going to be second best ever, if not pushing pretty darn good.
All right. Thanks much, Craig.
You're welcome.
Craig Parr is with the Andersons. He's based in Maumee, Ohio, and we'd like to thank our panelists and give them a chance for a final word. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Write your congressmen and senators about increasing the blends on ethanol.
To E15, or what would you like?
Higher.
E20? Higher. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
I already did that, Paul, and I'd like to encourage everybody else to do the same. I think it's a time for us to watch to sell some rallies in the corn market.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
We like the natural gas market. We feel we've got 2 to 3 weeks here to get long for a rally into this winter.
We'd like to thank our panelists. They are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Remember, you can always hear this program anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.